Everything is amazing right now, and nobody's happy.
Do you feel that we now, in the 21st century, we take technology for granted?
Well, yeah, because now we live in an amazing, amazing world, and it's wasted on the crappiest generation of just spoiled idiots that don't care, because this is what people are like now. They got their phone, and they're like, it won't... Give it a second! It's going to space! Can you give it a second to get back from space? Is the speed of light
true?
It's
true.
I was on an airplane, and there was internet, high-speed internet on the airplane. That's
yes.
The newest thing that I know exists. And I'm sitting on the plane, and they go, open up your laptop, you can go on the internet. And it's fast, and I'm watching YouTube clips. I'm in an airplane. And then it breaks down. And they apologize, the internet's not working. The guy next to me goes, this is bullshit. Like, how quickly the world owes him something
yes.
he knew existed only 10 seconds ago.
Right.
Action fans, we are back in the action room, and we are here to say yo mama. Why are we saying yo mama? Because it's the month of May, and that means it's Mother's Day.
Woo!
Thank you, studio audience. So I'm Tony Wolf,
and I'm producer Mike.
Oh, I like when producer Mike does funny voices too.
I haven't tried that one really before.
Yes, 1940s radio announcer.
How far can we go with this voice?
I don't know.
Do the we'll intro see. Stuff as the voice.
We've got new shows every Monday and Friday, brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. Camel, the light taste sensation that will never give you cancer. Join our Facebook fan page. Follow us on Twitter. What's Twitter? I don't know, but it'll be invented in approximately 85 years.
You know what's funny? I was watching SNL with Betty White. Which
oh,
was,
how was
it
the
was
Betty
awesome.
White episode?
Really, really funny.
Wow.
I mean, really well written. And a lot of the old female cast members came back.
Really?
Like Tina Fey, Anna Gasteyer, I think her
yes,
name is.
Yes.
Maya Rudolph. It was like really
wow.
Dratch, who we've talked
Rachel
about before.
Rachel Dratch, who wanted to go out with me.
Amy Poehler. but what was funny is they had an old thing like during the 20s, you know? And what the one woman said is, I'm all a Twitter, you know?
Oh, that's awesome.
That's where it comes from, I guess.
Your heart was fluttering, all a Twitter.
So, anyway, all right, well, keep going. I guess, well, I'll just say that the nerd news is going to be completely dedicated to this Iron Man 2 backlash.
Yes,
The criticism is just unwarranted. And
we're
gonna,
shocked at the people not liking Iron Man 2.
We're going to debunk one by one each of the criticisms,
yes.
But that's later in the show, and it's spoiler heavy.
Yes.
So please, if you don't want to listen to it, shut off the show later on. It's at the end of the
don't
show.
Don't shut it off now.
Not now.
Unless you really hate us.
And then if you haven't seen the movie, watch it. And then go back and listen to this episode, because I think we're really going to cover a lot of stuff.
Yes.
And we're going to make great points.
Now, by the way, speaking of Iron Man 2, we have a new video on our YouTube site. It's live video and audio from opening night at the Ziegfeld, the midnight showing. We were shocked that it was so poorly attended.
Yeah.
There were maybe, there was about six people there when we showed up at 10:30, 10:45. This is for a midnight showing, people. Around 11:30, there were maybe 40 people there, and by midnight, what do you think, maybe 50?
80, maybe at most.
Maybe 70?
The
theater was so empty.
The whole thing that's interesting is the footage that we shot, and you can check it out. It's Tony Wolf, Ziegfeld, it's the most current video we have up.
People thought it was fake.
Because it's so unrealistic looking. It's like we couldn't
There's
have done
There's
not
this. A soul in that area.
We couldn't have done this if we planned, and
yeah.
yet we did it, and it worked perfect for the sketch, but it just seems so unreal, and this is the truth is stranger than fiction.
And just before we shot it, there were some skater dudes
yeah,
who didn't
yeah.
give a shit about Iron Man
Everybody
2.
Had left.
They were making that little area that we show you in the video into a skater park, which it often is.
It's odd that there was no line for Iron Man 2, but it's even more odd just to see no people in New York City in the areas we shot in the first place.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah.
It was
bizarre.
A very odd-looking circumstance.
But once the movie got up and running, the small, tiny, pathetic crowd that was there, we were all very into it.
Yeah, it was like a small screening of nerds. Like,
yes.
just they loved
yes.
it. So,
All right. So, and I guess I can also tell you that in my acting career, in my acting life.
Yeah, there is a reason why we were playing with the voice at the beginning there of an old 20s radio announcer.
Radio announcer. I have an audition for a guest starring role as a radio announcer on Martin Scorsese's new HBO series, Boardwalk Empire.
Woo! Don't clap for yourself, Tony.
Well, that's right. It was a studio audience. It wasn't me.
He sounds just like you.
That's right. So it's a small little bit.
HBO, you can't get better.
Martin Scorsese.
Can't get better, and it's an era that you're perfect for.
Yeah, I've always felt, and people have always told me, that when I put on the clothing, when I slick the hair back...
the fedora.
You know, if only I were in Christian Slater's Mobsters, I could have played the nerdy guy or their accountant. There's always, like, a gangster accountant.
Well, this is what I feel, because I've always felt you were great for other eras, including the 80s. The 90s, I don't know. This era is a little bit
I think
different.
70s and 90s, I don't fit that much.
But here's the deal. There's going to be a geek boom, and I feel you're going to be perfect for a million roles now again, along the lines of the Big Bang guy, the skinny guy who totally reminds
actor.
Me of you,
yeah.
Except for the gay factor.
The tall, skinny, gay, super geek guy. He's not gay in the show. Maybe he is, actually. I don't know.
No.
But in any case...
No, he's actually going to have the love affair or whatever with Blossom, the actress.
Right.
Miami Powell.
Which makes sense, yes. Yeah. Big nose Blossom. Did she get a nose job, or...
I don't think so. She
all
stayed
right.
true to the
she
Jew.
Stayed true
the
to
Jew
her,
knows
to her DNA. So anyway, I have that audition tomorrow. It's
good
a really
luck.
Wonderful piece about Boardwalk Empire scripts. I've been told are very, very secretive. Everyone is sworn to secrecy. Mm. So all I can tell you is he announces a pivotal moment in American history,
and it's very interesting.
Yeah,
but we'll get into that another time,
yes.
maybe.
All right, if I get the job and I'm on
yeah,
HBO.
When we're on the set.
Yes. The action room will visit Scorsese. I know someone who knows Marty, too, so maybe we can all hang out with Marty.
Excuse me.
We can admire his eyebrows. I can groom his eyebrows.
So what is it? What would it be like for you to talk to Scorsese? Hey, Tony, how are you doing?
I might actually have to slow down my rapid-fire speech.
Right.
I think I would just be, I think I would be so in awe that I would downplay everything, and
right,
I'd be
right.
like, hey, wow, Mr. Scorsese, thank you. And then he'd go, call me Marty, call me Marty. It's okay. Listen, kid, you're great for this. All right. Anyway, so we shall
see. He talks
see.
Like a 20s mobster, kind of.
Or Joe Pesci, I
right,
think.
Right.
Maybe Joe Pesci could play Scorsese one day. That'll
could
be,
yeah. No, I'd like to see somebody play a Scorsese.
So in any case, okay, now, are we going to take a break or are we going to move on to these?
No, yeah. I have a couple of show corrections that I thought were necessary just
right.
given the last few shows. We had
what's that usually
things.
Called in newspapers? Not corrections. They call it... some other
know.
Word besides
corrections was what I thought.
Retractions,
no. But it's not a retraction.
Yeah,
so.
All right.
Anyway, when the whole thing, the sequence at the end of the credits that
right.
we saw
in our last episode, we referred to a number of things which you want to clarify for you action listeners.
So, if people didn't know, the post-credit sequence in this case for Iron Man, there was a sequence. We're not going to explain it in this
right.
segment. It's called the Stinger.
Right.
And it's also known as...
Any sequence that happens after the credits.
Yeah, it's also known as the tag or the movie coda.
Oh, yeah, well, a coda is a musical term.
And now, if it's a funny one, it's called a stinger gag.
Right.
But that's that. Okay,
like a little button.
Yeah.
And whatever plays before the credits in a movie or a TV show is called the teaser.
There you go.
So they tease you, and then they sting you.
They're horrible. It's like a woman. the other thing was Don Johnson, who's in the Machete movie.
We were referring to his show Miami Vice in
yeah.
the 80s.
And Cheech Marin, who's also in the Machete movie and a lot of Rodriguez's movies, they were in a show together, and I couldn't remember the name, and it was Nash Bridges.
Yes.
And it's from 96 to 2001. It actually did pretty well.
And once you and a friend of mine, Craig Cormier, an old buddy of mine and a listener of the show, Craig Cormier, he informed me of that, and I was like, oh, now that you mention it, yeah, I never watched it.
I never watched it
but
either.
I know the existence of Nash
It was
Bridges.
A pretty big show for that. I mean, it
right.
lasted, look, I mean, four or
Apparently,
5 years.
I just heard, by the way, in present-day life, Cheech Marin was just on Celebrity Jeopardy
I saw
and
a little
won.
That. Yeah.
Apparently, he's brilliant.
Yeah. What, are you shocked?
I'm
racist?
Not shocked. But he won, because he's a pothead. But he won $151,000.
Yeah, no, he's a cool guy. And then, there was another term that we used that dealt with, what did it deal with?
God, why are we
Parasite
talking about this?
3D.
Oh, yes.
It was all these schlocky movies
right,
that are coming
schlocky
back.
Schlocky 70s
And I was
films.
Wondering, where did that term schlock come from?
We all know what it is, but what's the origin? What's the literal meaning in Yiddish?
You can read the definition here.
All right, so schlock, we looked it up, is an English word. Of course, we knew it was Yiddish.
and it means something cheap, shoddy, or inferior, perhaps derived from the German word schlag, or the Yiddish schlock, meaning a stroke? I don't understand the stroke part. You get a stroke because it's so bad? Hey, this is killing me!
And then in the field of science, schlock refers to a shoddy or unreliable result. In art, schlock is sometimes used as a synonym for kitsch.
So that brings us to a close of the dictionary segment of the Action Room, which we've never done before.
What was interesting is schlock was also a 1973 low-budget satire film written by John Landis, who we have an ID from. He's American Werewolf in London, Blues Brothers. He's a Thriller video. He's an amazing director.
I truly believe the Blues Brothers movie, the first one, of course, is one of the greatest movies ever made.
I have to say, that type of humor is my favorite.
Yeah,
like, I'd like to see more of that. Yeah. But anyway, so I'd like
Not Blues Brothers 2000,
no,
which I never saw, but I heard is hilariously bad.
And then the last thing I just wanted to say was that we had mentioned in talking with Helen when she had her 80s cartoon medley, we were talking about Thundercats, and I said the person that did the voice of Panthro lives in my building,
yes,
and I'd love to get an interview with him, and his name is Earl Hyman, and he also played Huxtable, the father of Bill Cosby on The Cosby Show.
The kid's grandfather and Bill Cosby's father.
Huxtable. And what's interesting is he's going to be 84 this year, and it's the same birthday as mine, October 11th.
It's destiny.
But it's 1926. 1926!
Earl Hyman is destined to become Panthro! That's a further connection. You have to interview him now.
I have to. I mean,
can be your pickup line in the elevator.
Right.
Hey, Earl.
Happy birthday.
I have the same birthday as you. Want to go back to my place and be in the Action Room?
Wow, that's like on another level of gross. Okay, so after the break,
we'll do the nerd news. So we'll be right back. Welcome back, Action fans. As you know, I'm Tony Wolf.
And I'm producer Mike.
And that completes our station identification. So, all right, the nerd news. Well, let's play the nerd news intro.
Nerd news.
All right, the nerd news, as we mentioned earlier, will be all about Iron Man 2. Now, we loved Iron Man 2. We really loved it. We don't really have any criticisms of the movie. And I think it's a terrific film. I think history will be the judge that it is a much better film than people are saying. We're surprised at the tons of mediocre reviews or all the people saying, the first one's better. There's a lot of problems with this one. Some people actually said it reminded them of Spider-Man 3.
That's crazy.
People, do you know how awful Spider-Man 3 is? And do you know how not awful Iron Man 2 is? I can't take it.
Before we have to preface this again by saying this is going to be spoiler heavy.
Yes.
If you do not want to listen and you haven't seen the movie yet, shut it off now, but then listen to this episode because we are intelligent people.
And we believe in what we say. Spoiler alert, alert, alert. Spoiler.
Okay. So let's go one by one with the criticism.
I have read many of the reviews. I've read many discussions. I pissed off producer Mike by sending him an email with 17 paragraphs taken from various reviews.
You made me read.
If you ever want to anger producer Mike, get him to read large amounts of text. All right. So we're going to go one by one, and we are going to rationally and civilly debunk, as you said earlier, these critiques of what we believe is a great movie.
The only thing that would add to this, if we had somebody who had these critiques that we could literally punch while we're doing this.
And then the Action Room studio would become a boxing ring.
It would be real action.
Yes. Oh, wow. Maybe someday. That's a stunt we can do when we have a real budget.
Two nerds boxing. That'd be
Two
awesome.
Two nerds boxing. Okay. Point one. People felt there was not enough action and too many scenes of characters standing around talking. All right. Why don't you take it
well,
from here?
Well, I mean, I look at it this way. First of all, personally, and I understand there's a lot of people who love action and don't really care for dialogue.
And we like action, too. We are called the Action Room.
I love action. But, you know, it's like there is so much setup. Okay, so here we get into the spoilers. Some of my favorite scenes are Sam Rockwell monologuing, if that's a word.
Yes.
And
it is. The Incredibles movie, Brad Bird sort of coined it.
One of the big setups is this device that in the end doesn't work, and it's set up to be this like indestructible cataclysmic.
It's a missile that Sam Rockwell has created, and he brags that it's the best thing ever.
And talk about quotable
quotes. At the end, it's like,
it doesn't work. And so the whole thing is like, I love that.
Yeah.
If that wasn't in there and they had some action instead of that, it just – and also, you know, let me just say, I don't know. For me, action just gets tiring after a while.
Yeah.
It's just people flying around in explosions. Don't you want to see people actually, you know
– thinking?
Chewing up the carpet or whatever it is.
Chewing the scenery.
Chewing the scenery.
I honestly think this movie had very good action. Yes, it was more character-based. But if you look at the first Iron Man movie, it's not like there's an action scene every 7 minutes either. You know, if you look at the I'm gonna piss off some geeks now. If you look at The Empire Strikes Back, which we all acknowledge is one of the great films ever made, the greatest films ever made, it's not action every 8 minutes. There's so many scenes of people talking, Luke chilling out on Dagobah, learning, they travel to Cloud City. I mean, what is the action in Empire Strikes Back? There's the Hoth battle, right? There's Hoth. There's
there's Hoth.
I mean, there's Hoth. There's the climactic scene at the end where he reveals he's the father.
It.
And there's Cloud City, which has some chasing.
And some Yoda stuff.
But and some Yoda, which is not really action.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. It's like, first of
think about it, geeks!
First of all, and the other thing is, for what action it was, whatever I'm saying, it was better action than the first one, I thought.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the final sequence...
Because everyone agreed that the final sequence of Iron Man 1 was a little lackluster. It's just CGI robots fighting each other and...
People are just so used to nonstop action with movies that suck... That they're like Transformers, you know, and like, I don't know. It's just like, it bothered me that it's gotten to this point where people love these films from the past, which in a lot of ways are so much inferior to the ones that are coming out today. And yet people are just like, I don't know what they're expecting. Now,
we're not saying Star Wars is inferior. We're saying that other action films that aren't that good are what we're used to. They are inferior.
I mean, it's just like in general, if Star Wars and all those films came out now, people would be picking them apart with all the plot holes and the nitpicky shit.
It's cheesy and that's that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, I understand that people want to see more action, but if it took away from any of the character development, and that was the other thing, people went back and forth. They were like, there was not enough character development. How do you expect, what did you want, a 5-hour movie? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
And honestly, in a sequel, this is a brighter toned movie. This is not Batman. This is not The Dark Knight. You know, it's going to be a little bit brighter, more humor. The first one is full of humor. I don't understand the people who think that this was too full of funny things. The first one, it thrives on funny. So also, I'll say this about action. When you have an action scene only every 25 or 30 minutes, then the action is more important and is more exciting. It's about like music. You don't have a crescendo every other bar. You don't have a crescendo every verse.
Why was the Star Trek movie so great? It was because each one of the action sequences made complete sense.
Yeah, organically.
It wasn't just, you know, gratuitous. It was, and that's the thing that I think they're learning, is if you're going to have action, you need a purpose, not just doing it to do it. You know, like somebody said, I want to see more of him, like, blowing up terrorists. Why?
Yeah.
For what reason? I don't need to see that, you know?
You haven't seen that 80 million times before?
Yeah.
All right, point number two. People felt there were too many setups for other Marvel movies like Avengers, Thor, etc. They felt it wasn't enough of its own film. I disagree completely. I thought all the characters kind of were woven in and out of the script very seamlessly, and it made sense. It's still Tony Stark's story. It's still his arc. And producer Mike made the point, I told that to him over the phone, and he goes, that's the world he lives in. If you guys are going to geek out about a Marvel continuity in the movie world... You can't complain that it's too nerdy or too setups for other films when other characters from that world make little appearances.
And in the first one, we accepted the fact that this was Robert Downey Jr.'s vehicle, that we love Tony Stark.
Yeah.
This was the character that we wanted to see in the second one and the third one. So now that's what it's about. It's about him, you know? And so, you know, don't complain that there's not enough action. And with this Marvel, these connections with the Marvel movies, it's like... That's the exciting part. I can't wait to see how Thor connects with this world.
Yeah.
I mean, this is exciting.
And none of them, with the exception of Black Widow, who is a supporting character in this film and kind of more of a featured role, really, none of them took much more than 3 minutes, 5 minutes here or there for these other appearances.
I mean, it was perfectly, you know, paced and there wasn't too much of this and not enough of this. All the characters, I feel, were fleshed out enough. You know, and somebody else we were talking to mentioned how they wanted to see more of his drinking problem and stuff.
You didn't see that in the drunken party scene?
That was the whole party scene was that about that, you know what
I
mean?
And his extreme personality, the OCD, the bad judgment he's exhibiting.
The suicidal tendencies, I mean, that was
the fact that he's giving away his possessions.
Because he thinks he's going to die. I mean, that was fucking great, man.
And to those people who say, it's sequelitis, there were too many characters...
I don't think so.
Not at all.
I really don't think
Not at all. In some cases, I actually personally felt that way about like the Batman first movie and stuff. Too many characters got too
messy. In the first one, Batman Begins, yeah. You felt.
But this one, not at all.
And I will also argue the second Batman movie, The Dark Knight, that has tons of characters, but no one complains that it has too many characters, because like this movie, it is well-paced.
Okay, the comparison to Batman we're going to get into. I have some things about that.
Okay, so point number three.
Let's move through these a little bit.
All
okay.
right, point number three, too much humor, no intensity, no sense of danger.
Okay, now, this is possibly the only place I'll agree, which is the Monaco racetrack sequence. With, you know, Mickey Rourke destroying the cars.
I could agree a little bit here, too.
A few things about this might be, but the only thing I'll say is it's still consistent. And what I'll say about it is the one sequence where Jon Favreau drives against traffic into the race car thing is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he's the comic, you know, the comedy in the movie. Right. Every sequence he's in is about comedy. So it's consistent in that
And
sense.
It is scary that he's driving into these professional super speed racer guys.
It's fun. Are we forgetting this is supposed to be a fun movie and it's a comic book? So the whole idea is that because
not dumb fun, but good fun.
Is that Mickey Rourke is able to like destroy all these cars that are going at breakneck speed, but he can't kill Favreau when he's pinned up against the car. You know, Favreau and Robert Downey and Gwyneth,
right.
You know, he's 2 feet away from them. But the thing is, it's like, again, it's consistent with the humor of the characters of Jon Favreau and Gwyneth Paltrow playing the comedy relief in the movie.
Well, I don't know if I want to say that they're not just comedy relief. But
they aren't, but that is the consistent flavor of all their scenes.
And also, there are a lot of movies, I will cite Star Wars, the original trilogy among them, where the villains totally could have killed the heroes at multiple junctures, but none of us complained, why didn't he just kill him here?
Are we forgetting that what is some of the best parts of Star Wars? It's Han Solo's humor.
Yeah.
Are we forgetting that one of the best parts of Superman is Gene Hackman?
Right.
I mean, what the fuck are people expecting? It's got to be funny. It can't be just totally serious. And personally, that's why I think Batman isn't as strong, is because there's not more humor. It takes itself too seriously, I think.
Wow, okay. I don't know if I agree with Producer Mike there, but...
No, it's a personal thing,
yeah,
I know.
Right. Because you like Dark Knight, too. You loved it.
I loved it.
Yeah.
But I just think, as a personal preference, I would rather see some more humor.
Right. And as for the idea that Mickey Rourke's character could easily destroy these cars that were speeding at him at high speeds, but he couldn't get a good lick in on Tony Stark, who's 10 feet in front of him, I would say, yeah, I can buy that a little bit. But it's a movie. It's our hero. And, you know, he was constantly sort of, Stark was kind of dodging, then the car shows up, I mean,
it's pinning up him again, he can't get a great angle
or stretching. It is stretching the suspense out, but let me remind you, a famous director made his career stretching suspense out, and his name is Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, I mean, that's a total Steven Spielberg type of scene, you know, just the comedy of like...
Every time you think... You see this, by the way, this in a bunch of adventure movies. Let's say the hero has to duck under a door that's closing.
Mm-hmm.
If you look really carefully, the door, if you were to watch the editing of
it,
the door is kind of going slower than it is in other scenes, and it's all to maximize the suspense so the hero can get under at just the last minute.
Yeah.
But no one goes, wait, well, it's totally unrealistic that Indiana Jones could outrun the boulder.
Well, now they do. That's the problem. You know, people, too many comment forums have destroyed the movie experience.
All right, let's move on.
Go ahead.
You want to read number
four? So, Scarlett Johansson, what was the point of her? By the way, I did want to ask, you mentioned, and it's true, why don't they refer to her as Black Widow?
I think this is a wave in modern superhero movies where they don't always spell out the name. In Iron Man 1... Jeff Bridges at the end becomes a villain called the Ironmonger.
Okay.
But they never say the words Ironmonger.
Right.
But if you buy the toys or you get the book about the making of the movie, he's the Ironmonger.
Gotcha.
I'm sure that if she has a spinoff movie, as they've rumored, or when she's in the Avengers movie, and I do say when, then they'll say, you know, Nick Fury will show up and he'll go, she's codenamed Black Widow. You know, but I don't care that we didn't hear the words Black Widow.
Okay, so... Perfect. I thought she was great in it. She was very subtle.
She underplayed everything. She was mysterious and badass.
But the action was fucking awesome. I've never seen a girl kick that much ass in terms of it looking realistic and not just a girl trying to fight. You know, it really looks solid, the choreography.
By the way, her stunt double was the Lara Croft stunt double,
for
video game, motion capture video games or something.
It was the right amount of over-the-topness, but still realistic.
Yes.
And
some people complained that all she had to do was show up, be sexy, get revealed, and then have that fight scene.
And that's a bad thing.
But you know what? Why is that a bad thing?
Yeah, really.
If there was more than that, people would have gone, there's too many characters, there's too much.
So much. You can never please anybody. And then the main thing about her is that she was able to deactivate Rhodey.
She was able to bring Rhodey back in control of his own suit.
But she couldn't do that with the robots.
Right, with the drones that Mickey Rourke had set on them. Now,
right.
I will say, well, it makes sense because that suit is property of Iron Man and Tony Stark.
And Mickey Rourke created his own robot.
She's like in the good guy's computer system. And Mickey Rourke, he operates those drones from the bad guy's computer system. I don't think that, you know, I think it was cool that she had hacking ability as well as ass-kicking ability.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's logical to assume that she could just hack into the enemy's computer system.
Yet again, silly, nitpicky, and not a reason to not like
yes.
the film.
All right. Point five. Some people felt that Gwyneth Paltrow became, and these people are real idiots and real misogynists, I think. They said she became, quote, a whiny bitch.
But you know what?
They were angry that she got so frustrated and she was like, oh my God.
But you know what? She was a whiny bitch, but you know why? Because she was in love with Robert Downey, and she wanted him to kiss her already.
Well, and he's so damn frustrating.
Yeah.
I empathize
with
her.
But a lot of that was sexual frustration. You know, it was like, let's fuck already, you know? And so, Gwyneth, because she was like, and if you don't right now, I'm going to fucking leave. I'm quitting,
right,
you
right.
know? And he's like, all right, I got to kiss. Because the whole thing was Robert Downey had to grow up in this film.
Yeah.
And he did, and it was like awesome.
Right.
It was
and
an
a lot
awesome
of
arc.
The few fans that have praised the film and that have pointed out its good things, the banter between Gwyneth Paltrow and Robert Downey Jr. is very much like a 1940s, you know, banter romantic comedy kind of thing. And they really, it's charming.
And
it's
that
terrific.
Plays into the whole concept of, like, was it improv, like, the first one or whatever?
Some people felt the first movie was a lot of improv, and that's why it was great. And some people said, the second movie, it felt like a real script. It's not good. It should have been more improv like the first movie. They did it exactly the same way. Read an interview.
It's like,
it was exactly the same amount of improv.
And it's just amazing what people now...
I feel like Gwyneth Paltrow now. I'm so frustrated.
The Gulk is coming. I feel like, you know, people have these expectations now. They don't even know what they're expecting anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they think it's one thing, it's not another. They don't even know what they're talking about. So I'm going to move on from that.
Yes.
Last thing, we just want to, you know, again, give props to Sam Rockwell. Was he too funny and not a threat? That's bullshit. He was a threat. You could see the underlying, you know, anger and
that one scene where he gets really angry at Mickey Rourke's character, you see a guy who could murder someone.
And by the way, I don't speak Russian. No, he's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
And
when he feels he's been given a raw deal for Mickey Rourke,
just great.
Now, okay, the first Iron
Man. And to be honest, the last thing about that is that I expected his role to be very small. His role ended up being almost the biggest of the whole movie.
Right. I knew it was going to be a big, because he's the anti-Tony Stark.
Right, right, right.
And I love that he's just a wannabe, pedantic, simpering, you know.
But it was great that it was the same age versus you're saying in the comics he's an older character.
Yeah, Justin
I like
Hammer
how he's like a total rival to
yes.
Robert Downey.
Yes. And all of the products he makes suck.
Yeah.
So, okay, Iron Man 1 came on the scene. The country at large did not know who Iron Man was, or they barely knew, or they'd seen it on a t-shirt. The fans, no one expected the first Iron Man movie to be as good as it was.
I'm just going to follow this by saying, or, you know, compliment you. These are the major points. Expectations.
Yes.
You know, that plays in probably 90% of how people react
to the first
to the
movie
film.
Was so great and such a surprise in how great it was that people are expecting more perfection than they got in this movie, which is stupid and unrealistic.
And the truth is, if people had expected more from the first one, they probably would have criticized the first one a lot more, too.
Yeah.
So
I
anyway.
Mean, and someone, I read one comment on one of the forums, a guy said, what is wrong with people? Can't you appreciate a really good, incredibly solid, well-made movie anymore?
And that brings up the other point. Do we forget how bad these films used to be? Or
yeah.
at least how not great they used to
right.
be? Especially in the 90s when all the attempts at superhero comic book movies were horrible.
Yeah.
The Marvel movies especially were horrible. And so, I mean, the fact that we've gotten to this level, it's like a movie, if a movie like this came out, like 10 years ago, people would have been, their heads would have exploded, especially before the internet.
Yeah.
But now it's just like people just have are too critical.
I think this movie is a 10 or a 9.8 or a 9.7. And
if it's one of the best superhero films ever, it's got to be. I mean,
People were saying it's not as good as Spider-Man 2. I think it is as good as Spider-Man 2.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really see the difference.
No, not at all. And comparing it to Spider-Man 3 is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So one of my final points, you might have some more.
And I think this had gravitas and some seriousness and some depth to it. It wasn't just a joke and a gag
not
every
at all.
10 minutes.
Not at all.
And the humor came out of a real organic place for those characters.
But this does play into a little bit of like a, you know, PC Mac two sides kind of thing where, you know, I remember there was an argument with Bruce Lee movies. People who love Bruce Lee movies hated Jackie Chan because he was all humor and
right.
funniness
Stick.
And stuff. And he was like, not for real.
Right.
But he's just as good. He was just funny. You know what I mean? So you can't take away his skill, you know? So it's the same situation, I think, with this. There is the Batman camp and the Iron Man camp in terms of what you'd rather see. You want
right.
to see your superhero films done serious and intense and, you know, no humor? Or do you want to see them kind of like a little bit more fun?
A little more bright of a tone.
Now, personally, I like the more bright stuff, but I can also appreciate the serious stuff. At the end of the day, it's just about making a good film.
Right.
So you shouldn't knock a film just because there's more humor in it. And this plays into something that I don't know if you'll agree with, but I was thinking about this, is that DC does seem to be the more serious, where Marvel is the more
a little
comical.
Brighter in tone.
Yeah.
Also, some people have the critique, well, how can Rhodey, when he first, quote, steals the suit, which he doesn't really steal it, because obviously Tony gave him some codes a while ago at some point, how does
And he was a pilot.
Right. He was a professional pilot. That's his background. People were going, how does he know how to pilot the suit so well his first time out? You know what? First of all, I know that with the CGI, they went out of their way to show that he was a little wobbly when he landed, in some of his flying. That was enough for me. I could theoretically believe maybe he'd logged in a few hours on it, maybe before all this shit hit the fan, that Tony had allowed him to use it a little bit, even if he hadn't. He's a military guy. He's familiar with the technology. Why are we arguing about this stupid point?
And Don Cheadle was great.
Don Cheadle is so much of a better actor on any day of the week than Terrence Howard. It's like Don Cheadle is kind of in, I believe, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, he has such gravitas to him. He can play anything from very vulnerable, insecure guy, as he did with the Hotel Rwanda, Boogie Nights, and he can also play someone who is a commanding leader and have real presence and intelligence.
And another great cameo.
Terrence Howard I didn't like too much in the first one.
Another great part was Gary Shandling. I thought he was
Gary
Shandling's
great. Yeah. Beautifully cast as a senator.
Yeah, but you hate it when a little prick gets in your whatever.
Now,
it was.
Some people wondered why was the scene with Fury saying, well, we kind of not sure that we want you in the Avengers. And there was a slight question as to, wait, how is that scene resolved? Whatever. I'm sure he'll be in the Avengers. That'll get sorted out.
So here's the
one other thing. Some people said, why is Captain America's shield in this when it was also in the background of his lab in the first movie before his father's, you know, suitcase gets uncovered? That is just kind of a weird, silly Easter egg that doesn't make much sense.
My take on it is the fact that since it seemed to come from his dad, that it was something that, because now we're saying in the films that his dad was one of the creators of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right, which is new. That's not in the comics.
So I think it's a prototype or something that he was working on.
Right.
Because the one guy, who's the guy that says I have to go to New Mexico?
Agent Coulson, who's the S.H.I.E.L.D. liaison.
Who's watching him.
Right.
He says, how'd you get a hold of this? So I think it's a property of theirs and
right.
whatnot.
Although it doesn't explain why there would be something that looks like Captain America's S.H.I.E.L.D. in the background of the first movie.
Unless he was working on it or something. I don't know. It's kind of weird. But
that we can write off. You know, it's still a movie.
Yeah. And do we forget how much it didn't make any sense, but how cool it was than the first one? But anyway, speaking of Easter eggs, let's go through a couple of things that if you didn't catch, the next time you watch it, you can look out for.
Although you've probably read this in 37 articles. But, okay, when Tony Stark is in the French jail and he's going to visit Mickey Rourke for the first and only
time.
After the Monaco attempt on his life, he walks past a cell in the hallway and you catch a brief blur, a glimpse of a guy, a convict, and a flash photo is being taken, a mugshot of the guy. Well, apparently if you pause that on the trailer on YouTube, that's Thor.
That's awesome.
So that means in the new Thor movie, Thor is going to piss off the authorities somehow, get arrested, probably like a fish out of water, here I am on Earth, I don't know what I'm doing.
In France.
People are scared of me. Why he's in France, we don't know. But that was apparently Chris Hemsworth.
And obviously, if people don't understand or don't know, the stinger is them finding Thor's hammer in New Mexico.
Thor's hammer, which crashes and lands. And that's
a huge crater.
That's the King Arthur motif.
Yeah.
No one except the worthy can lift the hammer, just like no one except Arthur could lift the sword out of the stone.
And the other big Easter egg was the TV in the background.
Yes. Now, I'd read about this, but I didn't miss it. It happened so fast. In the scene that we were just talking about, where Nick Fury is talking to Tony Stark about the Avengers and whether he's going to be in it or not, there's a TV screen in that room that shows the college where the Edward Norton Hulk goes on a rampage in the Hulk movie.
Which I still haven't seen, unfortunately.
It's really very good. It's very entertaining. Once again, people could say it sucks. It's a really great, entertaining, well-made, very smart Hulk movie.
And
is it perfect? No, but it's really, really good.
I feel so sad that these people aren't enjoying one of the best, you know,
it's one of the best eras of comic book movies in the past 100 years
that we've ever lived in. I mean, it's like connecting all these people, all these worlds. It's so exciting.
It's cool. It's fun.
I'm just amped, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
How are they going to connect Thor with Iron Man? And yet they've already kind of done it, and it already seems to work.
How are those different worlds, the world of magic and the world of Iron Man, very technology-realistic, going to come together? You know, I'll also throw in, some fans said, there was no sex. Tony didn't have sex with anyone in the movie.
Nobody died either. It's a comic book movie. Don't worry about it.
It did occur to me, some of those civilians at the World's Fair at the end, they must have gotten hurt because there was glass everywhere.
Watching shards of glass in their face and blood all over.
Do you need that in your Iron Man movie?
It would have sucked.
If you do, please seek help.
So I would say to all the people who criticize this movie, you can suck a big Easter egg.
All right. And please, just appreciate the work, the hard work for a year and a half that someone like a Jon Favreau, who loves this character, put into this movie.
Yeah.
Don't dismiss it. Don't say it's like Joel Schumacher when it's not. I mean, come on, people.
And I do think, like you started this, I think in time, people are going to realize this was a great fucking movie and one of the best.
Yes.
And there's no complaints. So anyway, let's end the show.
All right. So we'll wrap it up. Go see Iron Man 2. Check out our video. Check out our Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. And in 5 months, hopefully I'm on Boardwalk Empire on HBO.
Yeah, well, why don't you end the show with a little bit of that?
Thanks for listening, Action Room fans. You've been swell. Tune in next time to The Action Room, President Herbert J. Hoover's favorite radio program. So long.